A bloodbath that has shocked the world is how British journalist Joan Grillo describes the drug war raging across Mexico. Recent estimates suggest that some 40,000 people have been killed there over the last 5 years. That's higher than the 10-year death toll in Afghanistan. And Grillo says Ciudad Juarez, just across the border from El Paso, Texas, is the most murderous city on the planet. In his new book, El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency, Grillo examines all aspects of the Mexican drug trade, beginning with the term itself. El Narco, he says, is the vast, often faceless network of drug traffickers that casts a murderous shadow over all of Mexico.
People struggle to really understand what this force is. And all the time you talk about El Narco being behind 30 bodies on the street, El Narco threatening politicians. But who really are these people and what really are they? When I first came to Mexico in 2001, the traffickers used to have gangbangers still, you know, guys with shaved heads and tattoos working for them to carry out their assassinations. Now they have fully fledged militias with AK-47s, RPGs, and they've become something very fearsome and very dangerous within Mexico.
And you paint a picture of them as being very deeply embedded in Mexican society. Give us a sense of how far these tentacles reach throughout Mexico.
Well, in terms of the reach into Mexican life, it is enormous. In some communities, they're the biggest corporation which offers work to young people.
They put up want ads on the street, you say?
They have done. In certain cases, you've seen drug trafficking organizations, like in one case, the CETAS, put up adverts on the street on blankets with a phone number saying, you know, why are you going to work on a bus? Join us. We'll get you a good salary. If you're an ex-military guy, you know, we'll give you a job.
Describe this cultural life that exists in the drug trafficking cartels.
Well, the drug trafficking cartels, with their money, often like to finance culture, just in the same way that wealthy people all over the world like to finance culture. Often for these drug traffickers, as they make their way through the ranks of the organizations, they like to try and get their name out there. One way to do that is to pay somebody to write a song about them. Now, if you go to places where there's a big history of drug trafficking, like Sinaloa State, and you talk to these musicians, you will find that any one of them will have the price they charge to write a song, to compose a ballad about somebody. For many people, I mean, inside these communities, they'll often refer to drug traffickers as valientes, using the Spanish word valientes, meaning brave ones. And that is one reason why it's so hard to stop this, because there is a sympathy for these people among large sections of the population.
Could you read one passage that I think illuminates the power of these drug ballads? This is on page 178 of your book.
I guess this is from a guy, Conrado Lugo. Okay. Conrado tells me the story of one low-level trafficker who paid to get a particularly catchy ballad made about him. Soon, everyone played it on his car stereo. The crime bosses were like, bring me the guy from that song. I want him to do the job for me. So he rose through the ranks because of the song. So what happened to him now, I asked. Oh, they killed him. He got too big. It was because of the song, really.
Give us a sense of the scale of this drug trade. How much money is there flowing through it, and how much of a profit can be made?
Drugs carry on being one of the best businesses for anybody to get into. Take the example of cocaine. You can buy a kilo brick of cocaine in Colombia for $2,000. When you sell it at gram level in the US, you can turn that into some $100,000. So for every dollar you put in, you take $50 out. Now, that area of buying the cocaine from Colombia and selling it to Americans is the area dominated by Mexican cartels.
And just to give us a sense of the quantity that's crossing the border, could you read a passage from the book here? It's at page 135.
Sure. Okay, in this particular passage, I describe going into a military base in northwestern Mexico in the state of Sinaloa, where they had all of the seized drugs. As we step inside, a cocktail of mystic, toxic smells greets us. To the left, towers of cling-wrap marijuana loom above our heads. To the right are huge sacks of cut-up ganja plants and enough seeds to give birth to a forest of psychedelic weed. Walking forward, we stumble into a pile of giant blue metal saucepans. The white sludge of raw methamphetamine fills the pan like a foul stew of ice and sour milk. In a corner, we catch sight of a much older Sinaloan product, black tar heroin, which looks like jet black Play-Doh oozing out of yellow cans. The scale is absolutely incredible of the drugs. Now, obviously, no one has the real numbers on the drug trade into the United States, but we think, we know it's tens of billions of dollars. In 10 years, you're talking about $250 billion.
What does the average Mexican citizen make of all of this? How do they relate to, cope with everything going on around them?
The Mexican society has been traumatized in the last 3 or 4 years by this violence. Communities really have been terrorized. But there was an interesting story recently about the opera in Ciudad Juárez. Despite this intense drug violence, there's been a surge in opera in Ciudad Juárez. People have really started going to the opera in large numbers, and people are saying, well, this opera was an amazing chance for us to forget about this drug violence. And that while you hear the music, it won't make anything better or improve your life, but for at least for those minutes of hearing the music, you can find an escape and imagine things getting better.
Joan Grillo is author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Renee Montagne.